International Capital Market Insights from ICMA.
Hello, this is Katie Kelly from ICMA. I am delighted to be joined today on this podcast by Gillian Haslam. Many of you will have heard of Gillian. She is an author, a trainer, and a motivational speaker who has spoken on myriad topics at many fora and leading international organizations, such as, to name a few, the Bank of England, Barclays, Bank of America, King's College London, and University of Cambridge. Gillian has been honored with a growing list of awards, including the Mother Teresa Memorial International Award, the True Legend Award from The Telegraph, and the Role Model of the Year by The Advertiser in London. She's also been covered extensively by the media, including BBC, ITV, Channel 5, Gulf News, The Independent, The Telegraph, The Times, and many others. I would encourage you to take a look at Gillian's website just to see her many, many accolades. So with that, thank you very much, Gillian, for speaking to us today, and welcome.
Thank you, Katie. I'm very, very delighted to be on this show, and thank you for having me.
Thank you. So, Gillian, taking a look at your profile and your website, and it seems that you overcame some pretty extraordinary circumstances during your childhood that many of us would not be able to identify with. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Yes, an extraordinary childhood, actually, as many people put it. I grew up as a daughter to parents with British ancestry. My father was a captain in the British Army. He served in India, Iraq, Iran, and many other countries. My mother has a mixture of a Scottish and Armenian background. My father's parents are both British. But we grew up in India. And India got her independence in 1947. And after that, the British were given 1 year in which to leave the country. Hundreds of families chose to return. One of those families were my dad's sister. And hundreds of families chose not to return because they loved India. That's where many of them were born and brought up at the time of the British Raj. My father was one of them. And they didn't want to return. And of course, the weather was a big factor as well. So they decided to stay there. And that's where all of us came along. But after India got her independence, we lost everything, home, house, and we were literally reduced to living under a flight of stairs. So from the time I was born to up to the time we lived under a flight of stairs, we went from one person's house to the other. Some people kept us, some people asked us to move on, some people kept us for 2 days, some kept us for 1 day. And eventually we found this place under a flight of stairs where we stayed for a very long time. After that, we moved, in the interest of time, though I'll tell you very quickly, we moved to a little room which is not more than 8 by 10 feet in a proper slum. When we were living under the stairs, in front of us, just about 2 feet away, it was a communal area. So people washed their clothes, bathed their children, went to the toilet. It was just a free for hundreds of people. And then we moved to this little place in a slum where, once again, just to be very brief with you, approximately 3,000 people shared three toilets. And it was, there was no electricity. There was hardly any, actually. And the sanitary conditions were zero, as you can imagine. And there were just millions of people who lived with us and near us. But that is really where I spent my entire childhood until I moved to New Delhi, where I saw this advertisement in a newspaper for an executive secretary to the CEO. And I applied for the job. And when I got to the interview, there were 250 girls for one job. But I made it to the number one position. And that's what changed my life.
Well, that is quite a remarkable story and really pretty shocking for most of us, I would say. So in the face of such adversity and such difficult circumstances, how did you manage to get that job, to acquire the skills that you then needed to, you know, to build a successful career and ultimately to get on in your life? What was it that drove you towards that?
To get the job, firstly, all I did was just a normal secretarial training, but my mother was highly charitable. She would take any person off the street and bring them home. So even if she didn't know you or she'd never met you from Adam, if you found you on the street with nothing, she would just bring you home and keep you in our little room. And that's how charitable she was. So we would say to my father, you know, she just can't bring strange men off the street and bring them home. We are all girl children. And my father used to say, children should be seen and not heard. So the person will stay with us. Because what three can eat, four can eat. So that's how we were brought up. My father, on the other hand, was highly inspirational. He spoke to us and taught us, you know, with quotes and poems and all of that. So all of that stood us in good stead. And at the time when I was interviewing for the job at Bank of America, my mother had cancer at the time, and I was fighting to save her life. But at the interview, I just said to the CEO that, look, I have two little siblings, a brother and a sister. And, you know, before I came along, my parents had already lost four children, two sisters and twins, Kimberly and Alan, a boy and a girl, to abject poverty and malnutrition. So it was really as though death took one of us and left one of us and took one of us and left one of us. And that's how I'm able to be speaking to you today. It's just a stroke of luck, really.
Well, I should say, I'm sure it's not luck. I mean, I can imagine it just takes sheer resilience and buckets full of determination to be able to, you know, to go to apply for that job and to look after your family in the way that you did as well.
Yes, I think there were two reasons for that. Number one is I definitely wanted to help my family out of the situation that we were living in. And I, you know, that's why a Hollywood movie is being made and the shooting starts in December. But when we were living in that slum, my little sister was brought home from the hospital and she was given 3 days to live. She was the fifth sibling that was given up for dead by the doctors. But I fought to save her life and I ran to a tea shop every day with a little bowl in my hand and literally begged him for milk, came back, fed it to her. And she lived past 3 days, 3 weeks and 3 years and she graduated in London and her picture was on very many buses and tubes and all of that. So we have been very resilient from very young. We have never had a tendency to give up, you know, during any crisis situation. So we've been brought up very, very differently. So when I got to this job at Bank of America, I just said that to the CEO. Listen, I have two little ones to bring up. My mom's dying of cancer and I'm willing to do whatever it takes if you just help me. I'm willing to do two jobs. And true enough, he gave me two jobs to do. Wow. And I worked from 7 a.m. in the morning to like 11 p.m. at night. And sometimes I would get home at 10 p.m. at night and my bell would ring and I would look down and it would be his driver saying, he's calling you back to the bank because there's a lot of work. So I would go back to the bank. But he was, you know, he was featured as the most frequent traveler in India. He was the CEO. He had a huge personality. Seven girls in the bank had literally run away from the bank. They were so afraid of him because he was quite a personality. Let me leave it there. But when I joined and I just worked and did whatever he wanted, and he just wanted somebody to work very, very hard. And he wanted the job done. And in return, he mentored me. He chose to mentor me. And I asked him, will you mentor me? Will you help me? And he did. And it changed my life forever.
So did you ever doubt that you would make something of yourself? I mean, it sounds like you had quite a heavy dose of self-belief, but did you ever feel like just giving up?
Yes, many times I've thought of giving up because it's very hard. And this is one of the reasons why people, very many, wish to be successful, but they are not successful because they want to be. But when they look at the work that has to be put in, and the amount of hours, you know, it's like the book, The Outliers, the 10,000 hour rule. When you have to put in so much of work every single day, and when you have to sacrifice almost everything in your life to get to where you want to, it's like, no, this isn't for me. I'm just okay as I am. And this is the work ethic that you have to adopt. And that's why I did two jobs at Bank of America. I did two jobs at RBS. And I think every single person I've ever worked for, you know, even the biggest bankers today are my best friends.
Amazing and really great story. So Gillian, just moving from your past into our future and really the strange circumstances that we all find ourselves facing at the moment, new challenges, new working conditions, many setbacks. This might specifically actually be true of women who find themselves fulfilling multiple roles. Mm-hmm. So do you have any advice for people who are struggling as to how to get through these challenging times? And also, I mean, you sound like a very positive person, and you've learned a lot from your own setbacks and your own adverse circumstances. So how can we take the positive from the current challenges and apply them to our future career as well as our own personal trajectory?
Katie, you know, I think the first thing is for us to view every situation, and there are two ways to do this. The first is to view every situation, whether you view it as adversity or an opportunity. And if you view it as an adversity, then it will remain an adversity. But if you can review every situation and look at it as there is a given opportunity hidden in between, you can look for that opportunity and seize it and make it work for you. But everything depends on an individual's mindset. That's what I believe. And another way of looking at it is a key question you need to ask yourself. I think I read it in a Forbes magazine or a Harvard magazine some time ago, where they asked the question, do you view yourself as a liability or an asset? Now, even when your eyes close, do you want people to remember you that you were a liability to your children or your family or your business or to your spouse? Or do you wish to be known as an asset, a person who actually was there for others? You know, I read this beautiful quote where they say, you have the ability to be this well of sweet water that everyone can come to drink. Now, you have this ability to be this well to your children, to your clients, to your business, to your spouse, to your family. Can you be that? But I think we all get so caught up in work. And I have a very good friend who works for a hospice. Her name is Teresa. And I always say to her, Teresa, how do you do this job? And she said, you know, Jill, I love it. And I said, what comes out of people? What do they ask you when, you know, they only have a few hours or a few days left on this earth? And she said, you would not believe it, but most of them say that I couldn't do this. If I had more time, I would do it. Or I wish my daughter could do it for me. Or I hope my son will do it. It's regret, regret, and more regret. And another thing that comes out is, you know what? All my life, I've only worked and worked and worked, and I've spent very little time with my family and with the people I love. So I think it's important if we take even half an hour out in the day, and if we are people who love meditation, fine. If you're not, like I am, I take this half an hour or 1 hour out in my day and I sit to make a plan. And you can be thoughtful, you can be tearful, you can be anything you want, because you can't lie to yourself when the lights go off. So if you're alone, it's time to evaluate your life, your day, what you're going to do, how you're going to manage. And I think, you know, as Winston Churchill did, when he sat in his office, he used to say to his secretary, no appointments, no calls, and no meetings. This is my thinking time. I just need time to sit and think and evaluate and plan, whether it's for a day, a week, or for my future. And I think if we do that, we kind of feel a sense of balance, a sense of stability. And we feel like we are in control. It's when we lose control that everything negative starts to happen. Illness, problems, issues, finance, everything goes down the drain. But if we can just find this time every day, it really and truly helps. I do it every day, and it really helps even with your mental health, you know, as I said.
I think that's really sound advice, actually. And I love the sort of the tangible perspective of being a liability or an asset as well. I think that really speaks to me, actually. Sort of moving on, but related to what you've just been discussing, Gillian, obviously in these difficult times, there's a focus on mental health. And of course, we're all prone to suffering from mental health under any circumstances, but particularly exacerbated in these difficult times when we're all quarantined and we're out of our usual dynamic and we're immersed in a totally different way of working and way of living. Do you have any other tips that you could give our members on how to build their mental strength, how to build their resilience to be able to deal with these conditions, and actually how to be positive and see beyond to better times, which will be forthcoming?
You know, Katie, I recently just delivered a talk to Bank of England on a midlife crisis. And I think what happens, especially with women, we tend to put ourselves on hold. Men don't often do that. They go for their careers, they go for whatever it is they have to go for, and they just get on with it. We, because of the emotional side to us, we tend to worry about the children. We tend to worry if we don't go home on time. We tend to worry about the homework. We tend to worry and worry and worry. And we put ourselves on hold. And then when we reach, you know, a certain age, we then worry about, okay, the kids are growing up. Everything is fine. But what about me? What about me? And, you know, Warren Buffett put this very well when he was once asked, what should we invest in our lives? Tell us, what expert guidance can you give us? And he said, the best investment you can make is first in yourself. Because if you don't make that investment in yourself, you will be incapable of helping anyone else. So I think during any crisis or at any point in time, whether we like it or not, we need to put ourselves first. We need to be number one. You know, just like they talk about oxygen on an aircraft, you need to be able to help yourself to be the source of water or energy or love or motivation or need or finance or whatever it is to anybody else. And that alone brings so much fulfillment and satisfaction. But of course, isolation does fuel depression, Katie. It does. And, you know, usually if we have a person with depression, we always advise them, go out, mix with friends, you know, don't stay alone, try to, you know, socialize. But it's pretty hard to advise someone to do that when you're being forced to isolate right now. Yeah. Right. So the best thing for people to do is to actually start talking to people, but the people even who you've talked to develop deeper connections with them. And talking always helps. So most of the time, we can't talk to our spouses, we can't talk to our families. We you know, there are trust issues, there are internal issues, there are problems. But talking is the biggest help that we can do. And of course, you know, there's a great saying, motion triggers emotion. It's not the other way around. It's not that if you sit at home and you watch a great movie, you start feeling better. No, it's motion. So whatever we do, even if we are isolated in a flat, it's very important to get your body going, even if it's very, very light physical exercise, because this reduces negative thought drastically. Any kind of motion reduces negative thought. That's why it's so important. And again, I go back to a case in question where there is a man suffering with Alzheimer's and he's virtually restricted to one room and a bed. And I always say to him, Harry, why? How do you manage all alone? And he's, Jillian, you know, nobody comes to see me. No one visits me. But I've kept these connections. He used to be a head teacher in a school. And now he, you know, prepares examination papers and sets exam papers and all that for different schools. And he says, these people call me all the time. They give me the work. I talk to them. I chat with them. But he's kept those ties going. He's kept those connections going. And that's what has kept him going, you see? And when it comes to peace of mind, I do think that even if you've spent 20 minutes a day finding control in your life, that in itself will keep you grounded in ways that you could never imagine. I think we just don't give ourselves enough time. That's what I believe, Katie.
Well, certainly very inspirational words, Jillian, and quite a lot of really good advice there that I think will resonate with everybody. I love the idea of investing in ourselves before anything else. I think that's something that we often overlook as professionals in the financial services and as, you know, members of families with busy lives. This has been extremely helpful, Jillian. I've really enjoyed our chat today. Really looking forward to the movie that you referred to, which is going to be released in, say, in 2020.
Yes, we were actually supposed to start the shooting in September, but now, you know, with COVID-19, it's a bit of a problem, but it is going to definitely go ahead in December or January. And the book is also being republished and scheduled to go out into over 80 countries very soon. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, we'll certainly keep a lookout for that. Just like to really thank you, Gillian, for taking the time to talk to us today. And hopefully we'll hear from you again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you. It's been a great pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this ICMA podcast. For more podcasts and more information about capital markets, check out our website, icmagroup.org.